You're about to enjoy TryHards, courtesy of MTGCast.com. If you enjoy TryHards or anything else supplied by MTGCast, please make a donation. Whether it's recurring or one time, you can help offset the very real overhead of bringing you the best podcasts in magic every week. MTGCast at MTGCast.com.
Hurley should have been drafted in the NFL as a kicker.
You were wearing pants, you fool.
How far ahead are we right now?
It's going to be a spicy one since this is just a 5K.
Kind of like grabbing your warmest, fuzziest blanket.
One day, I will get lucky enough.
I will fumble the ball every single time.
So good for, like, my magic soul.
Oh, you brave soul, saddling up for another late winter edition of Try Hards. That just means we're as far as possible from all of our beach bodies. Yeah, beach body number one, Matt Hurley. Beach body number two, Brian Tibbetts. Beach body number, okay, this doesn't matter anymore because none of us are really ready. I'm Sean Secrets. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Try Hards. We get it started each week with What Are You Drinking? We have a ton to get to this week. Will we be banned or restricted? Well, probably not. But we'll figure out who's back and who's still better than all. He might be our lead dog for What Are You Drinking Tonight. Hurley, what do you got in the glass?
I've got a giant glass of bourbon because I had like a 14-hour day today. So that's where I'm at.
I think that's always a great way to wash it down. Brian, what are you drinking?
I am enjoying some of my delicious birthday beer from last week. Abita Brewing Company down in Louisiana does such a good amber with the Abita Amber, but somebody got me the Turbo Dog, and I must say the Turbo Dog is fast becoming one of my favorite winter beers. It's a brown ale, caramely, chocolatey, really, really tasty.
As far as good winter beers go, I've got the Central Waters Slante, the Scottish style ale. It is warm going down. It's got that little bit of a bourbon background to it, so it always warms you on the way down. That's what we're drinking. We hope you've got something equally as delicious, because we're about to saddle up for a mega-large version, at least I expect, of this week's episode of Try Hards. Guys, what magic did you play? Matt, I know you've been busy.
Exactly one round of paper magic. Went and drafted a pile, played one round, and it was 11 people. So we had four rounds for draft, and I said, you know what? Just drop me because this is a pile. Don't even want to really talk about that. On my Wednesday night stream, I did get to play a Mono Green 12 post that I'm hoping to be able to play for our Legacy outing in March. And I will say, deck's just as much fun as I remember. It now has Mirage Mirror in it, and I really haven't played with it much since Mirage Mirror, but that card's really good in that deck. I post this on Twitter, but I think my favorite was the text I got to share with you guys. Here's the highlight of the night. Playing Legacy, game two versus Ant. I won game one. He went off, and then I crop rotated into something that essentially just blanked his draws. He turn one combos me, so I'm on turn. So he went first. I'm turn zero, essentially. Goes and gets Telemann Performance. And I put in parentheses, look it up. It's a 5-mana thing from, what is it, Morning Tide? Is that right?
No, it's from Conflux.
Conflux. Okay. Yep. And it says, reveal cards from your opponent's library until you reveal a creature card. Put that into play under yours. He revealed Emrakul, emptied out his hand to do it. My turn one was Forest, Crop Rotation, Caracas, bounce Emrakul back to my hand, and he just conceded. That was how that went. The deck's a ton of fun. I think it actually now has, with all these kind of value mid-rangey decks running around Legacy, I think it might be well-placed again because it was always really good during the Reign of Miracles. But I think without all the combo and these value mid-rangey decks, it does pretty good, and it's got decent matchups against non-super wastelandy decks. Death and Taxes is a little bit tough, but it can get around that. So that's my deck I'm hoping to play in March. Brian, what did you play?
Before I get to what I played, Hurley, I was watching you. I'm not trying to throw shade here, but you could have done so much better.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Hurley should have been drafted in the NFL as a kicker for as many times as he punted in some of his matches. But he owned them all, to his credit. it was just kind of like a learning league is what I was kind of thinking about it as. But no, that deck can get some crazy mana generated. And even if somebody takes out a Candelabra, the Cloud Post can really ramp that really quickly. And so I felt like you were in every match that you went up against. You had some bad luck, and again, a couple plays that, you know, were not ideal. But yeah, that looks like a really fun choice. And if you're wanting to do just some broken things, that looks like a fun deck to play.
I will say, like, one of my biggest ones, and it's just shaking the rust off the deck. I've only played it now, I think, two times and through leagues. I was actually going to get a Caracas with the Expedition map. I think he had an Embercool out already or had something out. Went and got my Caracas and then realized I had already played a land. And I'm like, well, I didn't need to play that land. Yeah. So I was just like, well, that was a punt. I lost that game. Yeah, no, I mean, it's definitely just shaking the rust off because the deck plays like almost no other deck that's out there.
So as for the Magic I played this week, watched Hurley play a little bit. Did not get any paper Magic in under my belt this week. There was just too much going on. But I did get a birthday invite, as I said last week, I believe, to the Arena Beta. I was really, really excited. So Saturday night, the wife was out of town after the kids went to bed. I logged on and got some arena time under my belt. And I got to say, I thoroughly enjoyed myself not playing any kind of Magic online, knowing what that looks like and then seeing what arena offered. I was thrilled to be able to kind of play Magic and kind of happy with my deck choice as well. So, yeah, I'll see how that keeps going. Got some feedback, obviously, to leave for Wizards on some things that just didn't make any sense whatsoever. I was trying to figure things out for like 5 minutes. And when you get half a beer in and you still can't figure out what's going on, you're kind of like, well, whatever. Sean, how about you? What Magic did you get under your belt?
The rest of Brian's thoughts on Arena were brought to you by his NDA agreement. So that large buzz that you just heard there was the NDA kicking in for Brian. I actually got to play at F&M this week, and it was standard at the shop. So I had text both of you, what should I play? What should I play? I wanted to play something that Sean owned, and eventually I showed up with a deck that the guys at the shop said, this looks like a deck that is called Cards Sean Owns at the Moment. And that's exactly what it was. It shook down to be a Mardu control deck where basically here's the way I set it up. So you've got red, black, white. The backbone of the deck is black with some white. And then the red is all just a splash, right? You've got some Abrades. You've got an Angrath. And that's pretty much it for the red. With that in mind, what you're strong against is anything that plays creatures. Well, the way the format sets up in standard, whether it's vehicles or whether it's snake or whether it's rug energy, everyone should be playing creatures. So what do I play in round one? Blue-white Approach of the Second Sun. So, of course, I muddled my way through that, ended up winning that. Round two, played blue-black control. I knew going in, hard blue control decks would be a terrible matchup because their counter spells are effective against me. Whereas when you're a Mardu control deck, or as the original innovator of the deck with myself years ago called it the Spanish Inquisition, because no one expects the Spanish Inquisition, you're a board control deck that can also go to the hand for some disruption because of the black in the list. But hard blue control lists have a huge advantage over you. There are two cards that the deck struggles with. Search for Ezcanta and the Scarab God. Guess which two cards blue-black control plays. So with some mulligans and then them actually playing the cards that are good in their deck, I lost that round. And then finally in rounds 3 and 4, I got to play against decks, you know, with creatures. And I think as I text you two, suckers. So that was a lot of fun. I put, Matt, because we had talked about it, I put a Profane Procession in the deck as a one of before starting that night. And while it was certainly sided out immediately against the control decks in the first two rounds, it was a house in rounds 3 and 4. Round 3, I played Black-Green Constrictor. And in round 4, I played against a dinosaur deck. And it was just the absolute nuts in both. In fact, there was a game in round 3, post-board, when we both brought in all of our Gontis, that I got to Gonti 9 times in one game. To Profane Procession. It was vomitous, the just ancillary value that happened, because I had my 4, then he had his, and then mine took a couple of his, and then after he played a couple, I put him under Profane Procession, then played him again. Just an amazing advantage machine for a deck that didn't have blue. So if you're expecting a metagame that's full of creature decks, it's an absolutely fantastic choice. If you're going to see a lot of blue-black control, it's something you can't even go near because you are, and I know that we don't usually have these dynamic differences in standard. I would say you're like a 70-30 dog in blue-black control, and that's before they go to the board and their game gets better. Best card that I'm discovering from it, uncommon, but it does everything you want it to do, Doomfall. Two colorless, one black, look at your opponent's hand, exile a non-land card. Exile, that's a big word now. Or target opponent exiles a creature of their choice. So if they play an unprotected threat, you can get it no matter how big it is. It has both modes on it, and I'm at three in the main. I'm thinking about going to four. Doomfall is quietly becoming the backbone of that deck because it's good no matter the situation, against creatures or against control. So I may post the deck list and see if you can take it further than I can. I got accused of playing standard version of EDH because all my creatures were a one of. By the way, if there is a creature that people aren't expecting that makes them contort their game plan, Scorpion God was fantastic. I had opponents
I wondered about that,
throwing
that
away three cards at a time just to get away from Scorpion God. It was crazy. It cleanly blocks Gideon because it's a 6/5 and Gideon's a 4/4 when you attack. There are just so many good things that it does. And if you ever untap with it, just you're the mayor of Value Town at that point. It's completely unfair if you ever untap with Scorpion God because you don't play it on 5. You play it on like turn 9 and then you use it one time anyway. And it's just so good. People were throwing away what my dinosaur opponent threw away three cards just to make sure that I couldn't play Scorpion God against him again. And I ended up winning that game going away because Profane Procession when they're playing dinosaurs is just, I take your stuff and hit you with it. It's like having a little brother where you grab their fist and you're like, why are you hitting yourself? Why are you hitting yourself?
I gotta ask Sean, did anybody play Artifact that cards and graveyards can't be target of spells or abilities?
Silent Gravestone. I had one in the sideboard and only brought it in against the blue-black deck because the red decks that I saw weren't playing the Daredevil where you can cast stuff out of your opponent's graveyard. So, yeah, I just bring it in against blue-black so that you can't use your Gearhulk shenanigans and other things to gain value.
And I feel like it's obviously it's good against Scarab God, but I didn't know if anybody's playing like the Esper Gifts deck, you know, the Gift of the God Pharaoh decks or anything like that.
Yeah, I
feel like it's one of those catch-alls that might end up popping, you know, two or three in sideboards.
Yeah, in fact, it was the Gift of the God Pharaoh's deck I was thinking about, and I did see one there. I never got matched up against him, but it would be a good answer for that. But it was just great to get out, play something that I'd been working on, theorizing with for a little bit, and have fun doing it. That was the Magic that we played. We hope everything you got to play was just as much fun, even if you probably didn't play Scorpion God. This weekend in America's Hat, it was GP Toronto. Modern, 1,677 players turned out for the format that was most recently dominated by Lantern Control at the Pro Tour. You know what that meant? Yeah, Lantern Control was nowhere to be seen this weekend. In fact, only BBD amongst big-name players had any success with the deck at all. Dan Ward on Bogles took it down. In honor of him, we will all take off our pants at this point here on Try Hards.
You were wearing pants, you fool.
Mm-hmm. Well, nobody had suited me up yet, so no, I
it's
wasn't.
It's cold in the basement. I don't want to do that.
All right, let's see. That would make Matt Rancor, Brian Daybreak Coronet, and I'll be Spider Umbra. Okay, we can all get together now and make one fantastic Voltron creature. Dan beat John Stern, the godfather of Canadian Magic, who was on burn. But this was interesting, guys. He turned back the clock for some old-school tech in Snaring Bridge. Burn wants to empty out its hand, and most of its creatures that attack, when they attack, they have 2 power or less. So you can very well regulate whether you get a one-sided attack phase, and it ended up doing well for him in the top 8. The rest of the top 8 featured Grishol Brand, Blue-White-Red Control, Elves, Traverse Shadow Affinity, and a straight burn deck. Brian, this was a fantastic weekend to watch, and my favorite deck of the weekend even finished outside the top 32, Esper Goryeo's Vengeance. Obsidot Ghost Council, Jace memory adept. This deck was a control value deck that also, oh yeah, could spike some big creature out of the graveyard thanks to Goryeo's Vengeance. It looks like this is a format that is perfect right now and had a great weekend in Toronto.
Sean, that pet deck of yours looks really, really fun.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing I love about Modern is that the decks that people are going to play are not going to be found in the top eight. They're going to be found 9 through 32, 32 to 64. Those are the decks that most people are playing. Any of those decks, as Dan Ward showed this weekend, can spike a GP. Because who thought that Bogles would have a winning weekend in this standard metagame? And who thought that Burn would make it to the finals? But guys, I was very curious with John Stern's amazing build with Leylines of Sanctity and with Ensnaring Bridge in a Burn list. I was kind of like scratching my head saying, that just doesn't look right. You've got a Monastery Swift Spear, you've got a Leyline of Sanctity and an Ensnaring Bridge, and you're just Rift Bolting your opponent? What's happening here? Did you like the tech, or did you think that was just kind of going a little bit off the radar to try to do something strange? Or is this maybe what Burn needs to do to stay competitive in this new Modern field?
I thought it was interesting because the one card that I kept wanting to pop up was Monastery Mentor. I thought Burn could get so much from that, and I thought Stern would be the one who would have the chutzpah and the magic legacy, so to speak, who could innovate on that front without getting torn down for trying something that might not work. They were even on the broadcast, Matt, calling this the new face of Lantern.
I mean, I would agree with that. It was really interesting tech. It's so weird to call even the Burn deck and Modern straight Burn because, it uses mainly red spells and red creatures to kill stuff. But at the same time, because it's running typically three colors, it does have the capability to go in different directions as well, post-sideboard or even pre-sideboard.
Looking at decks 9 through 32, Humans, Mardu Pyromancer, and Black Red Hollow One were littered all over that range of lists. Brian, is there something from this group that you think is going to have staying power? I know you love Mardu Pyromancer and Human seems for real, so essentially I'm asking you about Black Red Hollow One.
You know, I saw the Black Red Hollow One in action, and that was kind of a deck that I was just kind of like poo-pooing. Oh, it's going to be a flash in the pan. Somebody, you know, brewed this up pretty quick. But after watching it in action, I think my eyes got pretty big. I'm glad there was no one around to see it. Because, man, that can get out in front very, very quickly. And if it gets the nut draw where, you know, you're discarding three cards on turn one, you can get multiple hollow ones out within turn one, turn two. It's really, really hard to beat, I would think. So, yeah, that deck looks pretty good. I still think that the draws are so wonky with that deck that if you don't start fast, it's not going to have the staying power in a lot of different matches, so mulliganing is going to be really, really important. And if you're someone who knows what you're looking for and the hand to keep, it can reward you very, very well. The Mardu Pyromancer deck, I just love seeing that. I was sad to not see it in the top eight, but again, you know, how many of those decks were in the top 30 from 9 to 32? It was just a ton. So I think that deck's going to be sticking around for a while. I'm still fascinated by the Tron, not seeing any colorless Tron list, but the black green Tron seemed to have a pretty good weekend, not in the top eight, but again in the 9 to 32 list. I thought there were quite a few that just shows the power of the big Eldrazi creatures in this Modern format.
Yeah, if you want to give the reigning Modern champ fits, play Tron. That's an excellent matchup against Lantern Control. Hurley, were you surprised not to see Lantern Control nearly at all? I mentioned earlier that BBD, the former world champ, was the only one who had really a notable weekend with a deck at all. Is this a case of just a pro being able to take a ham sandwich to the win circle? Is the day in the sun over because people have their sights set on Lantern Control?
You know, I've said this in the past. I do think Lantern Control is the deck that's, it's kind of like Dredge in Legacy, where it'll pop up. It will always be good in like a pro's hand. It's a very technical deck. So I think that was a big factor in it not just popping up all over the places. It's a very technical deck. I don't think we'll ever have to discuss Lantern Control after this weekend unless changes happen.
Some changes did happen. And they are going to affect Modern in a big way. We'll get there in just a moment. There was a setup for this in the pre and post show. So if you're not a $5 Patreon member, you might be a little bit on the outside looking in. Brian, I'm going to pay this off right now from our pre-show discussion. The card I was thinking about all weekend long as I'm watching going, oh, that would be the nuts here. Oh, that would wreck them here. Oh, that seems to be the best card in the format right now. Anger of the Gods.
Oh, yep, yeah. That's the one. That's the one I was thinking of.
Absolutely. Gosh, there were so many board states where I'm just like, Anger of the Gods here is just a win.
That card is absolutely bonkers, I think. The fact that it exiles the creatures, too.
Yes.
Prevents so many shenanigans from happening and getting them back. So
Rally their ancestors shenanigans for you. Nope, those are exiled.
Those are exiled. So, no, as you said earlier, the exile is a big thing with, like, Doomfall. Anger of the Gods is an absolutely ridiculous magic card.
Yeah, I think that is just primed right now. And who better to take advantage than the Mardu Pyromancer list? Because you're playing tokens, so you're not worried about that. You can come back and reassemble, whether it's Lingering Souls out of the graveyard. Maybe this is the next hit. I don't know how this is going to get adopted, but it seems right now that Anger of the Gods should be something that most people are looking at in Modern. And guys, Anger of the Gods, that's one, a red, and a red. Well, you might not want to cascade into it, but it's certainly a possibility that you could hit after today's B&R announcement. In fact, this is the kind of B&R announcement that I love. Nothing was banned or restricted. In fact, Wizards took time to unban two sacred cards from Magic's past. Two natural predators of each other, even though Ian Duke said they weren't considered just because they preyed upon each other. Bloodbraid Elf, not seen since the days when Deathrite Shaman was legal in Modern, is now back in. Guess what we can now do? I was trying to think of the sickest thing that you could do with Bloodbraid Elf now. It's no longer Blightning, I think. I think it's Culligan's Command. Could you imagine?
Oh, yeah.
Bloodbraid Elf into Culligan's Command. How far ahead are we right now? We're miles ahead. But miles ahead might not be good enough to catch up with the greatest card of all time. It's not some ridiculous version of Tezzeret. It's not even a Johnny Vengeant. It's Jace the Mind Sculptor. Back in Modern. He has been banned since the format's inception. The first thing I, of course, thought of was, in my Jeskai control list, I'll probably replace the one Jace Architect of Thought with a Jace the Mind Sculptor. Might not be as good in all situations, especially with Mardu Pyromancer going wide with tokens. This might be a case where AOT is even better than JTMS. But on overall power level, the Mind Sculptor still takes it down. Matt, you're the finance guy. I already know that certain copies of Bloodbraid Elf have gone absolutely insane in the 12 hours since the announcement as we record this, and JTMS is up anywhere from 10 to 20%, depending on what site you look at. Are we just looking at more of this, or is this all speculation, and has the power of the format actually passed these cards by?
I don't know what site you're looking at for Jace the Mind Sculptor, but it's more up like 125%. So, yeah, if you find it for cheaper than that, I want to find out where.
Well, I have other jobs that I do, so I didn't get to look at this in the last 6 hours. That was only the 5 hours after the announcement.
People that are brewing currently with Bloodbraid and Jace forget that having multiple four drops in your hand, in your opening hand, will probably just cause you to lose in Modern the vast majority of the time. Got to remember that. So playing four Jace the Mind Sculptor is not automatically the answer. I don't know where the format's going. This completely changed the format, and it changed it in multiple ways. And you guys can agree or disagree with me. A, it changes how you fetch and when you fetch because of Brainstorm essentially being in the format now. B, it changes how you attack because you have to defend against Bloodbraid. Taking a hit for three in Modern is far worse than taking a hit for three in Legacy. And C, it's going to change deck building requirements. I don't know which way it's going to go. This is a huge shakeup, probably for the better, but I think that Bloodbraid is going to have a much bigger impact than Jace will, because unless the format shifts to kind of past the mid-range into either hyper aggro or control or glass cannon-y decks, you know, that go off turn two, turn three all the time, I think Jace is going to push the format towards there, but I think that Bloodbraid is the one that's going to be winning that format. I think Lantern Control got a lot worse. Just play Jace and you just win because Lantern can't really defend against that. it's not an indie elevator, but here's a free one, I would sell into the hype because I'm not exactly sure that it can maintain $150 value that Jace is currently selling for, and that's what it's selling for.
All right, Hurley, I just checked while you were giving us that update. My World Wake Jaces are up 100% from when I woke up this morning. So that's a pretty good day on the stock exchange. Brian, you've been the champion of all things modern here on TryHards. It has been called by none less than one half of the Sliver Kids, JVL, Jacob Van Loonen, as the healthiest, most diverse format in the history of Magic. That's what he said this weekend in Toronto.
Yeah.
Did this format need JTMS and Bloodbraid? Is this something that Wizards was doing inevitably? Or are we looking at a marketing intro into Masters 25 this summer? Because I'm assuming both of these are in there.
Can't imagine both of them not being in there. And if they're not, why the announcement now? Because they actually had to make the disclaimer that because of GP Lyon this weekend, this is not going into effect until Monday for paper Magic. It's going into effect on Wednesday for online Magic, just because they didn't want to screw up everybody's, you know, deck choices, etc. I'm not totally in agreement with Hurley. I think Jace the Mind Sculptor is going to have a big impact on Modern. Hurley, you said it. The fact that a Brainstorm effect is back in Modern, I think, is a big deal. If you've never played with the card Brainstorm or never activated Jace's zero ability to draw three and then put two from the back of your hand on top of your library, especially with a fetch land in play, how powerful that is. It's just kind of like grabbing your warmest, fuzziest blanket because you know you're just doing everything right and the world is better for it. So I'm of the mind that Jace is going to have a big effect on Modern. What I'm not so sure of is if it's going to warp the format. And so that's going to be what remains to be seen. I know some people on various social media sites are already saying that Jace is going to be banned on the April 18th announcement, you know, once they realize what an effect it's going to have. I'm not going that far, no. I think it's going to have more of an effect than like when Thopter Foundry was unbanned and they were like suddenly like, oh my God, this is going to crazy. And, you know, who plays Thopter Foundry decks anymore? I'm excited to see what cascade effects happen in the format. I think the Bloodbraid Elf was a great move. I really love that kind of deck building design to see, you know, how you can stack your 4, 3, 2, and 1 drops together to try to get the most value out of your Bloodbraids into this format. I remember, you know, cascading into things like Violent Outburst, which then gave you another cascade trigger, and you could just do some really broken things back in the Conflux days and Alara Reborn. Really, really fun. And I think there's room in the format for that to happen. So I'm like you. I'm excited to see what's going to happen. It didn't need it, but it's here. And so let the brewing begin.
I think the first challenge that I want to see is whether or not the original iteration of Kaw-Go is better than Modern. Because remember, Stoneforge Mystic is still banned in Modern. And that was a later innovation into the deck. But you can play Squadron Hawk in Modern. You can now play Jace the Mind Sculptor in Modern. You can play Thoughtseize. You can play counter spells. You can play swords. The old memes of birds carrying swords could once again be just good enough, because as we know from Legacy, if you get a shuffle effect with a Brainstorm, essentially what you get is your X number of cards minus the two worst ones. So you're not always plus your most valuable cards. What you get to do is put back your worst cards and then go get some different ones and ever incrementally upgrade your hand. So we'll see whether or not this is going to be good enough and how it will influence Modern going forward. That's this week's banned and restricted announcement. Matt, you have anything to add before you're restricted?
I also want to mention that does not go into effect for this weekend's SCG Open in Indianapolis.
Guys, the announcement came this week that dual decks are coming to an end with this April's Elves versus Inventors. That even sounds like a reach when you read it off the page. Brian, do you have a favorite dual deck, Brian, and will you miss them now that they're going to be gone?
Oh, my favorite of all time is Jace versus Chandra. Absolutely. I love the design of those. I think that most of them were hits, a few misses. I guess I didn't understand why go away from them. It was kind of a great out of the package, sit down, shuffle up and play kind of thing. Is it the fact that Wizards realized that they had flooded the market with too much product and they just, you know, their designers' heads are spinning and don't know another direction to go in with this? Switching things up, it's fine, I guess, but I am going to be a little sad to see them go. Sean, I remember you and I kind of opening these up. We did like a Garrick versus some other Planeswalker.
Garrick versus Liliana. Yep.
Yeah, the Garrick versus Liliana. That was a ton of fun, I thought. So,
those decks were really well balanced. Yeah, and so was Jace versus Chandra. Both those decks were really well balanced. Yeah.
The Is It Mage in me really likes the Jace versus Chandra one, but I'd have to say the Garrick Liliana is my second favorite.
Yeah, Elves versus Goblins, the original one that started it all. Very good. Some of those cards still very much in high demand because of the unique set symbol that came with them. For me, I know you guys will find this hard to believe. My favorite one is a Johnny Vengeant versus Nicol Bolas. It's the it's the only one that I have two copies of. I have one that is still unopened, and I have one that I use with people just to play for fun or people that I'm introducing to the game. I think those were very well thought out and bring a lot of the power of Magic into play. So they're a lot of fun. Matt, what do you think about dual decks? I know you've got to have a favorite, and do you think we're going to miss them when they go?
I never really used dual decks other than, you know, we occasionally did the let's pick one of these up and let's just play it against each other type of thing. I never really had a favorite or non-favorites. I think they were vastly, they could never get the balance right. And I'm not exactly sure who it was marketed towards. And I think that's why they're getting rid of it. It always seemed like they, you know, they would put non-standard cards in there and they would a lot of times put difficult cards in there. So it was kind of, you know, is it towards the new players? Is it towards the enfranchised players? Is it towards, you know, what the standard player? I mean, I just didn't understand where it sat in the ecosystem. But hopefully they do replace it with something because they don't have kind of other than the intro decks with the new Planeswalkers, which I think those are kind of what replaced them in the end. I do hope that they have something more catering towards the player that's not brand new, but the player that it maybe doesn't have every single thing they want or, you know, is relatively new.
Guys, this was interesting this week. A Korean company has been working on a mobile game codenamed Magic the Gathering M. It looks like it's a battle arena style game. Brian, you finally got your invite to Magic Arena to test the beta. And of course, your NDA prohibits you from talking about that at all. But now that you've had a taste of digital magic, would you be looking to play a battle arena style game on your mobile? Or is this something that you're not really interested in?
No, I'm not interested in. I saw that come out like as I was actually queuing up my arena beta for the first time. And it was just one of those things. I felt like the universe was laughing at me and saying, hey, old man, get with the times.
That's so
all
last
that
week.
Cardboard, yeah, all that cardboard in your basement is worth nothing. Everything's going to be going digital. And I was just kind of shaking my head thinking, man, what happened to the cardboard game I used to play on my living room carpet? I do sound like an old man. So playing on my mobile device, I've never been a fan of that at all. I think the smallest I can go is like a tablet. I play Tetris on my tablet. I do Deck Builder on the tablet. I do like games with my kids on the tablet. But we don't have any games on my phone. And I think that might be kind of my line of demarcation with current generation and, you know, myself is I can't do games on there. It's too small. It just doesn't seem right. I don't like it. And so that doesn't appeal to me in the least. I hope it appeals to somebody. And if it sounds cool, why not put it on a platform that could be tablet friendly or PC friendly? The mobile friendly stuff, no. I'm just going to kind of keep walking and see what other window shop offers me something of value.
Hurley, the cranky old man, just wants to play with his physical cards. By the way, I'm going to run out to his mom's house and check the shag carpeting. There might be a beta dual land in there he forgot about. While I'm doing
shag
that.
Shag carpeting would eat it.
Absolutely. While I'm doing that, looking for, let's be honest, a plateau or a Badlands is probably what I'm going to find. You have been on the train of talking about the increased marketing opportunities to grow the game, and you've wanted a mobile. You've been at the forefront of this conversation on this podcast about Magic getting a playable mobile. Have you seen any of the demos, and is this what's going to bridge them to that point?
I think this fills a similar gap as the Magic Puzzle Quest. I think that's a good thing. You know, people see it, they'll doubt, maybe if it's got some unique twist on it, they'll download it or they'll play it depending on how it's marketed, what it's playing towards. And then they'll say, ah, cool, what's this Magic game? And then, you know, whatever their upgrade path is, that's what they need to figure out. I think that's the big important one here, is that they need to fill this on the marketing side of things. They need to fill this with enjoy this game, discover what Magic the Gathering is. They don't need to point them towards like Daily MTG. They need to take them to a website that would maybe say, okay, here's your skill level, here's your familiarity with the game, and here's where you need to go to. Fantastic way to actually just say, okay, hey, here's another Magic IP. Let's do this.
So you don't want to point them right to Invoke Prejudice and have them figure out how that card works?
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, maybe that's...
Although weird. I hate to say this, but I think the marketing team at WotC might just do that. They might say, hey, here's 20,000 cards. Now figure out what to do with them.
Well, that's part of the interesting thing about Magic, is that it's something that chess can never be, which is infinitely customizable. And one of my favorite conversations with new players is, I didn't know this card existed until I played against it. And even though it probably punched them repeatedly in the teeth, there is that moment of wonder where you get to discover something new. And I think that is something that Magic really brought to the forefront of the gaming experience. So we'll see how that continues to carry through. Matt, you're our real online Magic player here on TryHards. So what did you make of the Magic Online announcement that they're going to a data change? Essentially, all of the 5-0 deck lists in each format that are, quote, distinct will now be shared. But distinct got a redefinition, kind of when George Bush redefined the word wetlands so that there would be no net loss in the early 90s. Distinct now means that each 75 must have 20 different cards. Magic Online has said that they don't want to feed into the big data archetype of just finding out what's best and reinforcing it. They want to showcase all the different possibilities. Is this going to result in more information, less information, or just different information that players will use?
I think it's going to be different information, but it's also going to be a better finger on the pulse of these, of the two formats that they specifically mentioned, which is Modern and Standard. But this is all predicated upon there being a good format. During the era of energy, you know, we talked about energy almost every week and how, you know, need to go. They would have really had to scrape the bottom of the barrel to find, you know, 20 different cards within the different decks. I do think it'll create a better format because people will be able to hop on and say, oh, this is what I expect to face. It's a lot of feel bads when you work on this deck and you're like, oh, this is a sweet deck. You're looking at the 5-0 list. You're like, yes, I'm going to take it in there. And all of a sudden you're just hit like a Mack truck with a deck that you didn't know existed. Maybe it's tokens that, you know, it's in 40% of the metagame, but for some reason didn't get hit on by that 5-0 list within the last couple weeks. No, I think it's a good thing all around. This kind of shifts the onus from, you know, the pros having all this data that they're working with internally about, you know, playing thousands of games and then keeping it internal within their teams, and it releases a little more out. And that nonsense of, oh, just hopes, you know, we're just solving the format because we release all the 5-0 is just complete nonsense, I think.
Guys, you know what I just realized? A month from this recording, we're going to be in St. Louis at Jeremy Amundsen's St. Louis Legacy event. He has been talking about this all over social media. He is a fantastic TO out of Central Missouri, and we are all going to be there playing. So I'm wondering, Brian, have you started to hone in on what you're going to play?
I am totally honed in on what I'm going to play. Blue-Red Delver, spicing things up a little bit with the addition of Snapcaster Mage to get a little bit more value out of all of the burn in the deck. And I'm also toying around with, and I'm going to have to test this out, but I still think it's probably a good idea, Sulfuric Vortex out of the sideboard. That's a card that a lot of people just cannot deal with. And if you can get ahead on life total and then just kind of sit back and let that just do its thing, I think that's going to be a good choice. So I'm looking forward to playing this deck in St. Louis in about a month.
Matt, this is way different than what he was talking about last week. He was talking about Rock Nick Fit, with dinosaurs and everything else. I think he's lost the flame. Brian, did you lose the flame? Are you not innovating?
I didn't lose the flame, guys. Here's the thing. I know how much time I have to devote to this between now and March, and I'm not going to show up with a 35% NickFit deck. I'm going to show up with a 90% Blue-Red Delver deck. So that's where I am right now. If I go over, which is not going to happen, I'll feel more comfortable doing that than thinking I just showed up with a pile of trash and then have to drown my sorrows with some good St. Louis beer.
Well, we know Brian's gone back to an old favorite, Matt. What are you looking to play in St. Louis in Legacy?
I'm still eyeballing that mono green 12 post deck. I sold my candelabras just because they were sitting around and I just wanted the money. and my tabernacle. That was the big one once I sold the tabernacle. One of our listeners has reached out to us and said that he could potentially help me out with that. If I can find the four candelabras and the tabernacle, I will definitely play mono green 12 post. If not, it's going to be probably Scapeshift Jund or Food Chain, but it's probably going to be Scapeshift Jund. So I'll know in the next week or so of what exactly I'm going to play, but it's going to be a spicy one since this is just a 5K we're going to.
If you need to borrow my foil pit fights and Phyrexian obliterators, they're always ready to go. That poor guy from St. Louis back in like 2012, I think he's still crying.
Never knew what hit him.
You know what? He thought that Knight of the Reliquary he had was great at like a 12-12. Sorry, buddy. Man, that's still my favorite moment in Magic, even up to this day right now. Hurley had me actually thinking about what I would play because he told us in the group chat leading up to the ban and restricted announcement today that Deathrite Shaman was getting banned in Legacy. And it was actually hard to go through my day. Guys, you'll understand what I'm talking about. You ever have that like half of you know what down below? And that's all I was thinking about all morning. I'm like, Deathrite Shaman gets banned in Legacy, man. It's Reanimator's world once again. And I got my foil Reanimator deck ready to get. It didn't happen. I'm still just of the self-punishing mindset that I still may just play Reanimator with all these Deathrite Shamans running around. I just love the deck so much, but I also love Pox. And I recently finished updating Pox with the new Planeswalker rule. It had been that long since I'd taken it out of the box. So I really am going to come down to some last-minute testing. It's either going to be classic blue-black Reanimator or mono-black Pox, one of the two that I'll be on in St. Louis. It's going to be a lot of fun either way. All right, guys, that brings us up to this week's In the Elevator. You would think, with all the banned and restricted announcements today, that Matt would have something topical and concise in the elevator. Instead, he's got some 3-drop flip planeswalker from a decade ago.
This is a Basswood Seer. I think this might be a good one with Bloodbraid Elf. These cards are only about $5.50 or so. The flip cards are not going to come back anytime soon. They were just reprinted and from the Vault Transform. Between $5 and $6, I think these are a steal. So I would look at all of the flip planeswalkers, not just for Bloodbraid, but in general moving forward. But I think Nissa Vastwood Seer has the most to gain from this banned and restricted announcement that we're living in.
Nissa Vastwood Seer, this week's In the Elevator. I'm sorry, the rug mage in me wants to Bloodbraid Elf into Flippy Jace and then flip it over afterwards.
And that's a really good possibility as well.
Yeah, but it's still not as good like as Colligan's Command, as we discussed earlier. So yeah. I think that's probably still the best thing. What's the best thing we can do with a card that's been, well, crawling around Brian's dome lately? Our brewmaster checks in with this new banned and restricted list in mind for this week's 3 minutes to brew.
So the card I've got in mind is one that is not going to add to our Cascade stack. It is going to try to stifle the Cascade stack, and that is Trickbind from Time Spiral. A blue and one counter target activated or triggered ability. If a permanent's ability is countered this way, activated abilities of that permanent can't be played this turn. Keywords on this card, gentlemen, is split second, which means that Cascade trigger just is null and void. You still get your 3-2 haster, but without the Cascade ability. Sean, I'm going to start with you. Do you think Trickbind is going to be a good foil for Bloodbraid Elf? See play a lot more in Modern now with this unbanning, or as just a good utility card moving forward?
Trickbind is an old friend of mine from Legacy. Whenever I play sort of these rogue-ish decks, I love having it. Trickbind is a combination split-second stifle that also gives you a little bit wider purview if you're willing to go in for the extra mana. Trickbind that I love to play is on Sneak Attack, because when you hit them the first time, they can't activate it for the rest of the turn. That's what you pay the extra mana for, along with Split Second, so that it can't be countered outside of a trigger like on Counterbalance or so forth. I think Trickbind is always going to be one of those saucy sideboard cards that some wizards just won't go in for, but others who are looking for the surprise value or who are looking for a little extra added advantage, because there are situations where it's just flat better than things like Stifle. I can also think of other things in this category like Shadow of Doubt that are just complete blowouts whenever you roll them out on an unsuspecting fellow wizard. So I would put Trickbind in that same category as Shadow of Doubt and things of that ilk. There's a time and place for it, but I don't think it's going to become a pillar of the format in any way.
I like the card. I really like the card, but I don't think it's Bloodbraid that's will cause this card to really be, you know, the card that, oh, all of a sudden Trickbind's good. I think it might be Jace. Like this Humans deck, let's use that as an example. Can't be countered, but maybe you stifle the trigger Meddling Mage. Playing a Jace deck, and you're going against this stuff. Maybe you stifle the trigger off of the Kitesail Freebooter. Activate abilities on creatures. I don't think it's just Bloodbraid Elf that's going to make it win. I think that the Jace is actually what's going to make this card better. But I do love this card, and I think it's always one that's been overlooked. With all these creature effects coming into play, I think this is a good card, and it's going to see some play in the format. Now, it might just be sideboard, but it will see some play.
I'm with you, and I'm glad you brought that up with Kitesail Freebooter and some of the other Humans decks. The Enter the Battlefield triggers, I think, are quite rampant in Modern right now. And so something like Trickbind is really, really effective because there's nothing you can do about it. I mean, the split second cards, I don't think get enough play. Sulfur Elemental gives -1/-1 to all white creatures, is the one that kind of takes out the death and taxes lists. That's about the only one that's really, really seen some legacy play. But I really think that there's going to be some brew space for a card like this moving forward in Modern. So get to work, everybody.
Trickbind, the way we might be going forward to combat both the Mind Sculptor and Bloodbraid Elf in Modern. That brings us up to what we did to get better at Magic this week. For me, one day, I will get lucky enough to need to know how to interpret the standings at the end of a multi-day tournament. And so I've been reading Reed Duke's How to Understand Standings on Channel Fireball. He does the basic one first, and then he gets into the more advanced stuff in the later editions of the article. Check it out. If you're not sure how to interpret tiebreakers and standings and table numbers and so on, Reed, as always, lays it out in easy-to-understand English that anyone can follow, even a tryhard. That's what I did to get better at Magic. Brian, what'd you do to get better at Magic?
Aside from watching a ton of the Modern GP from Toronto, which I found was just so good for like my Magic soul to see so many different decks, good pilots of the decks, I felt that getting on to the Arena beta was so good for me to kind of get the mojo back to playing Magic, even if it was in a very select amount of cards. You don't have access to everything. I was really, really happy with how I kind of put together the first deck I played. The opponent's play patterns were very solid, very tight. I came out on top both times. The deck's only going to get stronger. So, of course, with the NDA, I can't say too much. But I really like what I'm seeing so far, what I'm experiencing with the arena. And I can't wait to delve a little bit deeper and see what else I can do with it.
Matt, what'd you do to get better at Magic?
Oh, I streamed on Wednesday, which I will be streaming again this next Wednesday, but shaking the rust off. Every single time I play, especially Legacy, I'm like, oh, you know, I played this for a year, you know, a year or something. I can just pick it right up. And as Brian said, I will fumble the ball every single time. I don't know if maybe it's just me, if the pros experience this, if you don't play a deck for a while, even if the format has not changed a lot, and even if the deck has not changed a lot, you got to shake the rust off. And playing on stream, because that was the first time I had really played it on stream seriously, playing on stream was a really good experience, and I'm really excited for this St. Louis trip that we got coming up.
Brian, did you notice what Matt said? He's going to play it on Wednesday. Matt, you know what Wednesday is, right?
We're doing our celebration on tomorrow night.
Okay. So I was just wondering if Matt was going to bring Valentine's Day to the power of the stream, and that would have been fantastic.
Was it moved because of the stream or other considerations?
She works every Wednesday night, and everyone had asked off already. Not to get too deep in the personal life, but we're actually doing a Valentine's Day hike. So she just knew everyone wanted off. So she's like, you know what? I usually work on Wednesdays. I'll just work this Wednesday.
Just make sure you can afford to equip the Trailblazers boots and you'll be ready to go with MTG and love. That's what you get here with Matt, Brian. I'm Sean. May your favorite card be unbanned before we get together again next week. You brave soul joining us here on Try Hard.